Welcome to New Human Living Radio Show, bringing you powerful interviews to awaken the power in you. Learn more at newhumanliving.com. And now your host, Les Jensen.
Hello, and welcome to the show tonight. I'm so glad you chose to join us. I think we're in for a real treat. The intended topic of the show tonight is integrated leadership, merging masculine and feminine to lead from wholeness. And our guest tonight is Deva Haley Mitchell, and we're going to bring her on in just a minute. You know, the idea of wholeness is it's such a simple word, but yet when we talk about our human nature, there's you, there's me, and who are we? What is this thing? What does it mean to be human? And what would the wholeness of our human nature mean? You know, if you take a step back from the obvious aspect of our human nature, this body and perhaps this ego, and consider the notion of a soul, that you're a soul, I'm a soul, I think this idea of wholeness takes on a whole, pardon the pun, new realm of human potential. Because we're in a chapter of our human story where the old paradigm doesn't work anymore. The old story of what it means to be a human being can't even brush up against the truth of who we are. When we have this pure and sincere heart, and we have a disciplined ego, and what I mean by that is an ego that's not intimidated by powerful ideas of our heart, and then we truly and genuinely believe in the vision of our soul, when we can bring that kind of wholeness into our everyday life, the possibilities expand beyond description. And when you live there, when you play there, I suggest you develop a sense of trust of it, a sense of knowingness of it, to the point where your heart and soul have sway in your decisions by the minute, by the hour, and not so much by the month or the quarter. So many people live such a busy life, the inspiration of their heart and their soul never really make it down into their action items. It's kind of an etherical thought process they may tend to once in a while. But when you can bring that whole sense of self, that heart, that soul, and then that trusting ego into every moment of your life, then I suggest you become an exceptional example of what it means to be a human being. So let's get to it. You know, I'm so excited to have Deva back on the show. I think she embodies such a genuine and authentic sense of herself, from my perspective at least, that I think we're going to have a very compelling dialogue. Deva is a soul midwife, spiritual teacher, and a business leader. She is a co-founder of the Shift Network and founder of Inspiring Women with Soul, a unique online gathering of more than 100,000 women from more than 160 countries. Deva offers deeply experiential and transformative work through coaching, mentorship, courses, workshops, and retreats. And I really like these next two paragraphs. We are all being called into new forms of leadership in all areas of our life. This call can only be answered by drawing on an integrated source of wisdom within us, which is both masculine and feminine. I love that balance. As we tap this integrated source of strength and power, we can spark a level of healing and transformations that is desperately needed in our world. No vision is too big. No challenge is too difficult. And no event from your past can hold you back when you have the guidance of visionary mentors who've gone before you. Women leaders already healing our world by drawing on this integrated power. I love that. As we integrate the masculine and feminine within, you too can become a positive force for real change in your life, family, community, and the planet. Join me in welcoming David to the show. It's so delightful to have you back on the show.
Thank you, Les. Thank you, Les. I appreciate being back. And this is a topic that we've been thinking about a lot. In one of the communities that I run, I have a membership community that's called the Inspiring Women Soul Sisterhood. And one of the themes that we explore there is around leadership and how do we lead powerfully. And, you know, I think it's really it's an interesting time on the planet, especially for those of us living in the United States, where for the first time ever, you know, no matter what your political leanings, we have, you know, a women nominee for president. And I think that's created a context where there's a lot of conversation about, you know, what does it mean to be a leader? What are the qualities of a leader? And, you know, a lot of discussion that's not always very illuminated in my conversation in my opinion, you know, what does Hillary look like or sound like or how shrill is her voice or this and that. But I think, you know, it can go a little bit off the rails at times, but I think there's an interesting opportunity for us here to really look at, okay, well, what does it mean to walk as a leader, whether you're in a feminine body or in a masculine body, in a way that really integrates this wholeness that you were talking about before, Les? And I think within the, you know, a lot of the women in the women's movement, there was a period of time where I think there was a real rejection of many of the masculine traits and values and sort of a, you know, we are not that, and really trying to set ourselves apart. And, you know, I know for myself personally, definitely took a very deep dive into feminine values and the sacred feminine and, you know, really rejecting both internally, you know, those parts of myself that I would call more masculine, be those the parts that are more structured or disciplined or, you know, hierarchical, and rejecting those in myself, but also rejecting those, you know, externally as well. And that's when I took my own deep swing from being, you know, more of a management consultant in the business world to going into spirituality and going into ministry and getting my doctorate in ministry. And now I feel personally where I'm being called back, but also where it feels like the whole collective is being called back, is to say, hey, no, wait a minute. A lot of those male traits, or more male, I should say, are things that are actually very important and very helpful. And so how do we really honor the nobility and the strength and the, you know, true power of the masculine, but also call in the feminine in a deeper way? And I feel like there's been some movement in that direction, especially as I think about within leadership circles, you know, back in the 90s when Daniel Goleman introduced his book, which was not a brand new idea, but he really popularized the whole conversation around emotional intelligence and, you know, really looking at a realm that traditionally has been more seen as a feminine sphere of, you know, what is going on with our emotions and how can we be, you know, tuned in with our own emotions, those of our colleagues, those of other people, and how can we moderate and adapt and really be tuned in on that level. And so that became a principle that's been woven in now much more systemically into the leadership conversation. But I feel like it's only one piece of the puzzle, like feminine values and feminine leadership. Only one small part is about emotions and emotional intelligence, but there's this whole other realm of kind of feminine beingness. And, you know, some of what's also come up in conversations around leadership presence, you know, the whole idea of It's not just what you do, but who you are, and that special something that has people trust you or be inspired by you or want to follow you. That's also part of the equation. And so I think we're just at this really right moment in our collective where we get to really look at the fullness, the wholeness, and how can, you know, what are some of those values from all sides, masculine, feminine, or none of the above, that want to be integrated for us really to be the most effective leaders that we can be, the most compassionate leaders that we can be, the most holistic. And I really think that there's a call for that in response to the huge challenges we're facing on our planet at this time.
Well, you make some really good points, because from my perspective, the women's movement from decades ago, it seemed like the way women became successful in one paradigm had them really suppressing their femininity and donning a masculine, like, okay, I'm gonna be a powerful woman by turning on my masculine yang energy and being a really dominant kind of a woman. And it really isn't, it doesn't have that sense authenticity when we think about what the divine feminine is all about. And then what you just touched on, when you mentioned emotional intelligence, the being raised a man here in America, the idea of being very open with your emotions and especially expressing those of vulnerability and unknowingness, which is, I think, a real powerful aspect of the feminine, the masculine just couldn't embrace those and be acknowledged by the rest of the masculine world as valid and legitimate. And then you turn around and bring it to the point of the feminine in the moment, so to speak. And from my perspective, it seems like one of the most powerful aspects of the feminine is the unknowing aspect of the feminine. It's like masculine defines time and space, and, you know, we'll land on the moon in exactly 223 trillion milliseconds. And I mean, we quantify everything, and the feminine has this vast unknowingness. It's like all the answers to all the questions that ever existed exist within the feminine, and therefore it has no specific definition of its own, if you will, in the sense
the ability to tolerate the unknown, or be in the mystery, really, you know. I think, and again, both are important. I think you just made a really beautiful point about, you know, how we've all sort of been cheated in a certain way. It's like the same way that, you know, women were cheated in some ways by not really allowing themselves to be fully feminine. At the same time, men were also cheated, because the truth is, all of us, no matter what skin we wear, if it's a male body, a female body, a transgender body, I know there's so many different descriptors that people are, you know, going by now in terms of gender, but no matter which one of those we wear, the truth is that we're all a blend. And, you know, I think it's really poignant what you just point out there, Les, about, you know, as a man, how, you know, if you were tapped into your feminine side, which, you know, all men are to some degree, of course, because we're all of it, you know, you and other men were cheated of the ability to be, you know, openly tuned in with your emotions, probably before Daniel's book became really popular, you know, to admit, you know, not knowing or being in that mystery or allowing more spaciousness. And I think, you know, when these boxes were defined of, you know, what is a leader, and as you said, I certainly remember in my corporate life, you know, being a leader meant being more like a man. And so I did my best to have people not notice that I was, you know, I mean, it was probably sort of hard, but to not notice that I was a woman. So I definitely remember doing certain things when I was in corporate America. I never would wear a skirt. I would always wear a pantsuit. I would not usually wear my hair down, but I'd pull it back in a tight, you know, tight ponytail or bun. I purposely wore glasses to not have people notice what I look like and just, you know, be...
and I mean, these are things
I wasn't fully aware of, but it's like when I look back at that, and when I even look at pictures of myself, which don't really look like the real me, it was sort of, you know, I felt like I had to put on this suit, literally, but also figuratively, of, you know, what it meant to be perceived as powerful or intelligent or trustworthy as a leader, and especially because I was pretty young, and I look even younger than I am, and so there was this piece of, you know, well, I won't be taken seriously unless I, you know, look as old as possible, look as unattractive as possible, and as masculine as possible, and that really, you know, short-circuited me of a lot of my authentic leadership. And I think what's beautiful now is that there's this whole movement towards, you know, being authentic and being more transparent and being a real human that includes, you know, a feminine side and a masculine side and all the gray zone in between, and really letting that be a part of, you know, being who we are. That there's there's nothing actually wrong with that. It's more about getting comfortable with that and being able to notice, you know, what are my strengths within that and how do I really play to those, and then either hone or pull in team members that can support me in those areas that are not my natural strengths.
Yeah, and I like that. You know, we talk about integrated leadership as a fundamental aspect of this dialogue tonight. And I love working with people and promoting their sense of personal power. And even that notion is contrary to the masculine that I grew up in. And I love to flip things over, to turn it completely over and look at the opposite. So what if we backed up 100 trillion years and we switched history from being an overdose of testosterone to being very feminine or estrogen oriented, and imagine us coming out of 100,000 years of femininity and masculine.
They probably have equally big problems.
Well,
but just different kinds.
Right. But so if that was the case, what would the, I mean, we've been talking about the norm of the masculine where you shut down your emotions, you don't show weakness, and there's this really yang thing that you kind of don to be seen as legitimate and whole in the masculine arena. Let's flip that over. If we had lived in a completely feminine environment, what would have that looked like in our culture, in our business, in our economics? I mean, what are the core attributes of a wholly feminine arena? And that can give us glimpses
I think what we've been talking about just now is some of like the shadow of the masculine. But, you know, what I've come to see from diving deeply into the feminine is, you know, we got to get real with ourselves, especially the women listening, that there's an equally strong shadow of the feminine as well. So, for example, when I've dove really deep into feminine circles, you know, some of the things that I've seen swing the other direction that have been not necessarily an improvement, but have been, you know, things becoming overly emotional or overly unstructured. So many, you know, consensus-based processes where meetings can go on and on for hours and not actually make progress or traction, and things feeling like overly kind of swirling, and, you know, at the end of a meeting not really knowing, well, did anyone actually take notes, and did we actually come up with any action items, and oftentimes, you know, very process-oriented, which had us maybe feel connected, but, like, we didn't move very far very fast, and that could also be very frustrating, and so, you know, or women can be in the shadow, there can be like a needy quality, you know, an overly needy, or And so that's, again, where I think that there's something very healthy about being integrated and really saying, yes, we need some aspects of the feminine, many aspects, including, you know, some of the ones that aren't really talked about much specifically when we're talking about leadership. But one of the pieces that I'm really tuned in with is, in the same way that, you know, rational, linear problem solving is a very valuable and helpful aspect of the masculine, equally important, but I think kind of under-celebrated, is the feminine, which is the intuitive, and really being able to open to wisdom that is not rational, that's coming in from spirit, that's coming in from the natural world, and the ability to, you know, read and interpret the signs and symbols and synchronicities of the universe, but also to really pay attention in a much deeper way than most of us do to, you know, that still small voice, which often shows up, you know, as a hunch or a feeling, something that all of us have, but many times when we're faced with, well, do I listen to that rational part of myself, or do I listen to that, you know, little nudge or wink? It can often, the nudge or wink that's the intuition can get overridden because it hasn't been valued as highly. But I've been in many situations where the thing that's actually helped me the most is actually when I've really listened to my intuition. And I can remember a situation where I was working overseas, and this was actually in a volunteer capacity, but I was really inspired, but also inspired in because I was troubled. I was troubled by what was happening in the Democratic Republic of Congo, and I really felt like, you know, the level of war and the war on women and the level of kind of, you know, rape and pillage of women in the Congo was really unacceptable to me. And I wanted to somehow be a part of the solution to reducing the violence. And so I planned a volunteer trip where I was going to learn some methodologies for really doing peace building. It was actually using theater, which was I was kind of skeptical how effective it was. It turned out that it was really effective, but I was going to be trained in a certain modality in the Congo, and then they wanted me to go train people in another country, in Angola, to use this same modality. And right before I was, like a few days, maybe 4 or 5 days before I was meant to go to the Congo, the CNN started broadcasting, you know, war in Congo. But there had been a low-grade war going on for a long time, but it was really flaring up. And it was right in the area where I was headed, like exactly where I was headed. And I remember, you know, being gripped by fear and waking up the morning after I saw these CNN announcements where my whole body was so stiff and contracted. My whole neck had gone out. And because I was terrified, basically, and yet my intuition had told me I'm really being called to go there. And I remember, you know, being in this place of really trying to decide, should I follow through on this trip, or is this just too dangerous and should I back out? And I remember having a conversation with a mentor, and she said, well, really tune in with your intuition about, you know, the danger and see, you know, is it too dangerous to go, and really listen to your intuition. And I remember saying to her, well, if I'm wrong, the stakes are pretty high, you know, like if you know, is it my fear or my intuition talking to me? And she said, well, my dear, that's why this is an initiation for you, because you have to learn to be very clear the different voices in your head. What is fear? What is, you know, the inner judge? What is your intuition? And but I remember being very frightened, because I said, and if I'm wrong, then I go into a war zone where they're, you know, really against women. Like, this could be a very bad situation for me. And anyway, I just kept tuning in with my intuition and had the very strong sense I was meant to go. And my intuition ended up just, you know, guiding me scene by scene and place by place, so that it turned out to be, it was in the middle of a war-torn, rough situation, but my personal experience was totally amazing. Gorgeous people, so filled with life and love, and, you know, just always navigating each night. Is it safe to go out? Is it safe to stay in? And I felt like I really learned, because I didn't have my rational, you know, I couldn't calculate a lot of these things. I didn't know, you know, what was happening all the time, but I just had to go by my intuition, and it became a strong ally, and I started to learn, like, wow, this is something that is undervalued, but is very, very powerful, because it can be such a strong guiding force when you really tap into it and allow it to guide you.
Well, you bring up such good points. You know, when John F. Kennedy said, you know, let's go to the moon and let's do it within a decade, the masculine Western mind pulls out a slide rule and plots every damn step for the next 10 years. And so it's what I'm getting at is every single step is chosen. We're going to need rockets. We're going to need portable ice cream. Well, maybe not that. And every single step was decided. But when you talked about your trip, all of it was unknown. And I think one of the really powerful aspects of the new age of feminine leadership is to hold the idea of the end game and completely right. surrender and abandon any notion of a particular path. And like you said, you're being present in the moment without a plan, if you will, which would drive purely masculine guys off the deep end.
Well, there's actually a great term that's there's a great term that's come up that I know they use in a whole system of governance that's called holacracy, or there's another very similar one called sociocracy, and they have a term that I really love, which is called dynamic steering, and it's about of just having, you know, your every action step planned out, you're able to be kind of nimble and flexible in the moment. And so, like you said, I have this analogy that I use where in our mystery school, we work with different archetypes of the feminine, and we've talked about that before on other shows. But one of the archetypes we work with is Artemis, and Artemis is an archer, right? So the masculine side of Artemis would, you know, pull back her bow and arrow, and she's looking at her target, and her target is whatever it is she's wanting to manifest, and gets really clear with her intentions and maybe her action steps or whatever else, you know, she might have, but she has her intention and she, you know, going for it full on with her intention. But then the feminine comes along, which is the wind, and the wind might take the arrow not exactly towards the target, but might take it, you know, somewhere slightly different. But that slightly different place might be, you know, exactly the answer to the deeper prayer in her heart. And so I think there's something about letting go of our idea that we, the little I, know what's best, or, you know, how to actually manifest something. And often the prayer that I try to hold is, you know, here's my intention, this or better, and releasing to allow room for spirit to co-create with me, for the universe to co-create with me. Like, I might know I'm going north, but, you know, is it really going to be best to drive or to take a plane, or is there going to be a snowstorm where the plane's going to get canceled and I would actually be better doing something else? And to be in this place of dynamic steering where we have our intention, that masculine, you know, we're going north, but then we're also allowing for dynamic steering and allowing ourselves to be in this dance with the mystery where, you know, something greater than imagined that perhaps fulfills us, or, you know, there's different aspects that we weren't aware of that wanted to be included. And And at the end of the day, you know, we might not get there exactly at the moment that we planned or exactly the way we planned, but we feel so gratified and fulfilled along the way, and we've still, you know, gone in the direction that we were wanting, but in a way that feels more organic and natural. And I think that's one of the gifts of the feminine, and that we can bring to the masculine, but not abandoning the masculine, or, you know, that arrow might blow so far from the target that, you know, it has absolutely nothing to do with our original vision. So there's this tension point, but I feel like that tension point is also the place where there's like magic, and if it's a creative tension that actually is really healthy and allows something that's like really juicy to be born there.
Oh, sure. I like that a lot. The masculine tends to have this linear thinking thing where it's all incremental and preordained, if you will. And I really like the idea of the soul, the soul is brilliant at nonlinear thinking. So say, for example, you profess as an intention, I want a more loving relationship. And the little mind, the little I, says, well, damn it, I need to move towards love. And the soul's like, well, look at the junk in your trunk. You've got anger, bitterness, all this crap. If you want to know love, you need to not go to love. You need to go this opposite way that has nothing, seemingly nothing to do with what you want to manifest. Because we're coming out of such a karmically laden history of our culture. We've got to shed so much of the imprinting and patterning mentally and emotionally in order for us to really embody that the power of what this moment offers. And so I really like where you're going with this as far as being tuned in to, you know, the wind driving the arrow wherever the hell it needs to go, and I don't need to see that straight line between me and the target. It's a much more nonlinear platform to work from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think that there's a time and a place for everything. You know, there's also, as I said, there's those moments where, you know, you have a timeline, you have a deadline, something that needs to get done by then. And, you know, I also feel like there are tools that the masculine has gotten very skilled with that help us, you know, when that's important. I think in any case, it's about looking at what are your priorities. You know, is it about delivering something, for example, on time, and using certain masculine principles can help you do that when that's important? Or is it more about, you know, having a fulfilling journey and, you know, not needing to know all the steps? And so there's not just one approach, I think, to leadership. I think it's not a cookie cutter form. It's really, there's conversations about, you know, what's called situational leadership, and really looking at, you know, ultimately what's important here in this situation. Is it about really, you know, building the connectivity of the people in the room? And if that's something that's really important, there's a very different way that you would go about doing that versus, you know, we need to be in this room for an hour, and by the time we walk out, we have to have, you know, an action plan. And, you know, so being able to read the situation, and when possible, you know, bringing in more feminine principles. For example, another one that is often, I think, under-celebrated is not just the wisdom of our intuition, but also, you know, a lot of that intuitive wisdom lives in our body. And I just have been preparing on this coming Saturday. We have a women's visionary salon coming up where I'm talking with 5 different women who are amazing leaders in different regards. And one of the women is named Anadea Judith, who is best known for her work as a writer about the chakras and really using what she calls charge, the different energy of all the chakras, to be able to manifest and lead and utilize in a lot of different ways. But as she and I are preparing for the conversation we'll be having on Saturday, she's been talking a lot about, you know, another aspect of feminine is really including our body wisdom much more explicitly, whereas the masculine is very mental. And again, there's so much beauty and power and luminosity available there. And yet, it's only one of our centers of brilliance. This other center of brilliance, which is vast, is the wisdom of this body. And, you know, the wisdom that's encoded in our DNA that is able to replicate and even create new life. So how do we listen much more deeply to our body? And whether that's in the boardroom or in our personal lives and personal situations where we're being called into leadership, how do we make space to really tune in to, like, oh, okay, you know, any particular decision? I know I've had many decisions that have felt like complicated and hard to decide, you know, which way to go. And then when I, and maybe you could even just do this with me, everyone who's listening, you know, when you just take a deep breath or a couple deep breaths, maybe we could do this together, where you just take a situation in your life, something that you are needing to make a decision about, and you have had trouble making a rational decision. You know, I know sometimes decision-making is something that, if it's an important decision, doesn't come easy to me. I'm remembering that decision about, you know, going to the Congo or canceling my trip, and I was torn. So see if there's something for you that's like that, that you're having indecision about. And then kind of holding that in your mind's eye, then just dropping as if it was like a pebble, imagining you're dropping that pebble from your mind down into your heart. And you're just taking a few deep breaths. And maybe you're bringing this decision that you need to make kind of front and center in your being and in your heart. And then one way to listen to your body wisdom is to examine one of your choices, one of your options. So whatever it might be for you, your first option of what you could do. And as you bring that into your mind's eye, just again noticing your body. And when something is like a yes in the body, it tends to feel open. You might even notice you're gently kind of leaning forward. For example, if I were to say to you, the sky is blue, which I intend to be a true statement in the daytime, at least where I live, the sky is blue. And just notice what that feels like in your body, something that is a true statement. Usually it'll feel more open, you're leaning towards it, you can feel your body kind of receptive. And then if I were to say, the sky is red, on a normal day in your neighborhood, the sky is red, probably you feel, well, notice, what do you feel? How does your body respond to something that's a false statement? And then now just taking that same sensory experience you just had, what a yes or this is true feels like in your body, and then what a no, or this is false, feels like in your body. And let's just apply it again to your own situation, this decision. So option, your first option, bringing that into your mind's eye and into your body. And just noticing, how does your body respond? Does it feel more like a yes, open, receptive, like the sky is blue statement? Or does it feel a little more contracted, a little more pulled in or tight? Maybe you're leaning back as a no. And then taking your second option and doing the same thing. So putting that second option now in your heart. Imagine yourself pursuing the second possibility. And seeing how your being responds to this one. Is there more of that open yes or the closed no? Now, we don't have a lot of time to go into this in depth right now, but I just wanted to use this as a real simple way to start noticing how something that can sound kind of vague, like listening to your body wisdom, how you can actually use it in very practical ways for decision making that's not just based on your mind, but that's using this incredible intelligence that lives in your body. I'm wondering, was there any difference for you, Les, or were you able to, did that little exercise work for you or make sense?
Yes, indeed. Like you said, it felt much more open and vast, if you will, like lucid. And then when it was the contrary, it had no invitingness, if you will. It was like dull and flat, and so it was pretty distinct between the two. And
now,
was there
a choice
that
you were trying to make, like two different things you could pursue in a decision?
Yeah, sure.
That's great. Yeah, so it's super simple on a certain level, but that's why I'm saying, you know, a lot of these tools, they're not that complicated, but we just don't utilize them because they're sort of like under-acknowledged or under-celebrated, or even that you should pay attention to your body wisdom, or that could really help you. Now, again, it's starting to become more popular with all this stuff that people are doing now with muscle testing. I'm sure many of you are familiar, you know, when many people, you know, will muscle test everything. Should I go to the supermarket now? Should I, you know, and you can, you know, test on yourself, you know, whether, and I mean, what I was just speaking to, if your body leans forward, that's another kind of a simple way to use a muscle testing. You can just stand on a level surface and ask yourself a question, yes, no question. You know, should I go to the Congo? And just really let yourself be still. And then if your body leans kind of forward, that's a yes. And if your body leans backward, that's a no. And often I can come to a decision personally much more quickly using that body wisdom, whereas in my mind I'm putting pros and cons and trying to assign values to each one, and it can get to be a very complicated process. So I'm not saying to ignore the mind, but just how do we have a more holistic way of making decisions and leading that ends up feeling good, but also being more effective and efficient at times as well.
Well, and I really like what you're saying. And from my own life, there was a period of time where I really wanted to trust my intuition explicitly. And I found myself in several moments. I mean, for example, one, it was late at night and somebody was pounding on the front door. This is large muscle group pounding on the front door. And I tuned into my gut and I said, am I safe? And it said, yes. And so I went over and I opened the door, and it could have been all kinds of things. My mind was going, what the hell are you doing? And what I'm getting at is, if you just stay in your head and you don't really put some traction to this, you'll never learning to trust it is never really gets developed like a muscle. And the more I learn to trust, regardless of what my mind was saying, and it taught my mind to trust the value of my own intuition.
Mm-hmm.
And then my mind could prefer my intuition over what my mind would conjure up. And for myself, that made a big difference. Hey, so we've got about 10 minutes left. I want to make sure we get your platform covered. For example, this Saturday with the Visionary Women's Salon, do you have the web link for that that you can share with
the
audience? I do.
Yes, I do. And this is something that's going to be happening live this Saturday at 10 a.m. Pacific. You can find out it by going to, this is kind of a long link, so you probably want to write this down. It is at theshiftnetwork.com, theshiftnetwork.com/Visionary Women's Salon. So one more time, it's theshiftnetwork.com/Visionary Women's Salon. And when you get there, you'll see it's a free event. A number of really powerful women speaking, as I mentioned already, Anadea Judith, Lisa Nichols. She was one of the powerhouse women featured in The Secret. So she's amazing, and you'll get to hear from her. Sage Levine, who's the founder of a company called Women Rocking Business. And she'll share some of the leadership values that she's discovered. We'll be learning from Sherry Lasala. She's someone who runs our Shift Network. That's the company I co-founded, our Leadership Academy. And she'll be talking about some of the most pressing issues facing women as leaders. But we're really looking at this all from a more holistic perspective. So it's not just about, you know, business, but really this more full-scale leadership model that we've been touching on here today. And then also, I wanted to let you know, for those of you who would really who are women, this is a women's program, who would like to be part of an ongoing community, I've started something called the Inspiring Women's Soul Sisterhood, and it's a place where we gather. We have video, live video sessions with lots of incredible women speakers, but we're creating dialogues where it's not, you don't just get to listen, but you get to participate, ask your questions. There's a lot of experiential exercises and a Facebook group to keep us all connected, and you get recordings of all of the things. There's a lot of information about it, but you can find out about that at soulsisterhood.net, soulsisterhood.net. And then finally, if you are interested in some one-on-one mentorship, I've just opened up a couple of spaces in my personal coaching and mentorship practice. I do both more strategic leadership coaching, but I also do more spiritually oriented mentorship. And you can find out about that if you go to my website, which is just my first name, which is spelled D-E-V as in Victor, A, and then another A.com, D-E-V-A-A.com. And you can find out about working with me one-on-one as well.
Very nice. You know, I really like the compassion of your heart in all that you do. I mean, it shows up in all these platforms that you've created for yourself, and you just embody it in such a genuine and authentic way. I'm always delighted to have you on the show.
Well, thank you. Thank you for being so receptive. I feel like you're a man who's very integrated in your own masculine and feminine, and also really willing to go into a lot of these topics with me that not all men are equally interested in. So I really appreciate you for that.
I'm all in. Let's do it. I mean, let's heal this planet. I mean, from my perspective, the most powerful substance on the planet is human consciousness. And all the world wars we've had in the past show that gods or goddess is not going to come down from the heavens like some flipping glowing orb and shut down all the war machines. It's going to be through our humanness, through our human experience. And when you share, like you have in this episode, how to merge the masculine and feminine, that's my background is power, just raw power. And the way power happens is balance, is purity and balance. And if there's purity, you can show up in a much more powerful way. And so let's go there. I mean, the feminine... The unknowingness of the feminine intrigues me. One of my favorite sayings is, well, my unknowing mind knows so much more than my knowing mind that I'm much more interested in what it has to say. In other words, let me open to the inspiration of the moment and not think that I know anything. And I can be inspired beyond my wisdom, if you will.
Mhm. Mhm. Well, there's so much vastness, you know, and it takes humility to realize that there's a vastness beyond any of our mind, you know, and there's a cosmic intelligence that, if we're willing to open to it, is wanting to flow through us, is wanting to help guide us, is wanting to co-create with us. And it's about us opening our receptors beyond, you know, just our 3D senses, but to get more tuned in where we can learn how to pay attention to those signs and signals, because they're there. It's giving us information that's actually helpful information for us.
Very well said. Well, so let's take a moment and just talk about feminine attributes, and they can be either personally or collectively. What would you just popcorn thought kind of thinking present as far as attributes of our humanness that will bring a more balanced feminine into our everyday life? I mean.
Well, I would say, you know, the first thing that comes to my mind is the first word that just came up was around love. And I know that's something that you're all about. And from that kind of open-heartedness. And I think that, you know, because all of our culture has been so centered on the mind, we haven't paid enough attention to what I think is the most, you know, powerful energy on our planet, which is love. And so No matter what we're up to really look at, you know, how can we, and it's easier to be, of course, loving and open-hearted with those that we know, those we feel connected to, those that are in our in-group that are similar to us and believe the same way as we do. But I've really been looking at in my own life and also around me, you know, how do I hold an open heart with people who are very different from me? It's come up a lot in this, you know, political cycle where I've taken a lot of hints from my husband, Stephen Dynan, who just put out a book about transpartisan politics, which is really about, you know, how do you have your own beliefs, but really be willing to basically have an open heart and a loving stance towards someone who's very different from you, who believes different than you, and who sees the world differently from you. And so I feel like that's one of the things that I don't think it's only feminine, but feminine does tend to focus a lot on the heart and the loving aspect. But how do we offer a loving stance, a loving presence in the face of things that upset us or repel us or make us afraid, and, you know, kind of show up with this, you know, willingness to like kind of reach out our hand across what can sometimes feel like a big abyss. And, you know, especially right now in the States, as I said, in this political season, there are moments when I hear people from another party really sharing their views. And it's so foreign to me that I'm baffled, like I just don't understand, and I'm really working to, like, how do I keep my heart open to this person who, you know, their viewpoint might frighten me. Like, wow, if their candidate gets elected, I feel afraid. But, like, here we are, both Americans. And so I think there's a great opportunity for us to really, you know, practice compassion, practice walking a mile in someone else's shoes. You know, maybe I would feel very differently if I had someone else's experience. I work in a prison as a volunteer. I haven't done it this year, but I've for the past 4 years, and really opening my heart to these prisoners were people that originally frightened me, you know, given they were locked up, they had committed serious crimes. But as I heard their stories about their lives, I came and you know, through that, walked in their shoes, I really came to understand and feel like, wow, and maybe if I had grown up that way, I would be in a similar situation perhaps. So I think that that's, you know, one or two things that goes quite a long way.
Sure. Oh, I like that. I like the idea of the saying, if you can't see God in the next face you look at, there's no point in going any farther. It, I mean, we're all the divine personified, and when you can approach it from love, that there's nothing for resistance to take hold of. In other words, if you engage in fear, then it promotes a similar response. But love just has this etherical, magical quality to it that says, I see you and I accept you for who you are in this moment now without condition or cause.
Yeah.
And from that space, the differences melt because they're just, they take effort to sustain over time. And sometimes we're so damn tired, we'd love to put it down, but we don't get the opportunity. And then love comes along and it just melts. It's like, damn, why didn't I try that in the first place?
Yeah, and it's what, you know, as we're speaking about this, I'm just, you know, reflecting. It is so much easier said than done when we're really in the face of something that challenges us. And so whether something that challenges you might be someone's different political stance or whatever it might be, I really want to invite you. There is a beautiful statement by Ram Dass, who many of you might know, but he would talk about doing his spiritual practice in the morning where he would sit and he would meditate and he would look at these different items he had on his altar and he'd say, oh, Jesus, you know, welcome and, you know, love you, Buddha, honor you. And then another picture that he had on his altar, and this was a number of years ago, but he had a picture of George Bush on his altar, who for him
right.
was someone that deeply challenged him. And so and his challenge was to look Jesus, Buddha, then look at George Bush and be able to say with the same, you know, hello, George. Okay, I'm honoring you. And it was a challenge for him, but he specifically put that there to, you know, to say, okay, and how can I see the divine in this space that to me looks frightening or not aligned with
yeah.
what I am? And so I'm just challenging everyone listening to find someone in your life that's your equivalent of, you know, someone that really challenges you, and to, you know, for the next week, live with the inquiry, how can I approach this person with deep love, even if they drive you crazy, and it's so interesting how things can shift when you take the first step to just really saying, I'm just going to show up with love, even in the face of real challenge. There's miracles that can happen. So I want to encourage you just to take it on and try and see what happens as a way to be a leader by, you know, choosing the energy you want to show up with and not being in response to what's coming your way.
Very nice. Very well said. And with that note, we're pretty much out of time. So I want to make sure that I thank you. It's always a delight, Deva, to have you on the show. And thank you for being our guest again.
Thank you so much, Les.
We've been talking with Deva Haley Mitchell, and the topic tonight has been integrated leadership, merging masculine and feminine to lead from wholeness. That wholeness that we all are, to kind of what the show started on. I mean, you're a personification of the creator that has no opposite, that has no limitations. Your soul has no concept of fear. Your soul has no concept of limitations. And yet so many of us spend our days in our ego. When you can get your ego on board to see the raw value, and it can be intimidating because your heart and soul can be a very powerful aspect of yourself. But when you can teach your soul, your ego, to trust the vision of your heart and your soul, and then step out of the way and let it flow through you, in you, as you, then the vision of your life expands exponentially. And your ego gets this vision of what can happen in a lifetime and go, oh, my God, I'm in. So trust who you are. Trust why you're here. Trust your purpose. I'm your host, Les Jensen. I'm so delighted you chose to join us tonight. Until next time.
This has been a New Human Living Radio broadcast. to bring your soul's inspiration into effect and live your life wide open. Check out our host, Les Jensen's latest book, Citizen King, The New Age of Power, at newhumanliving.com. Thanks for listening.